I'd like to call the meeting to order, the April 1st, 2019 law enforcement meeting. And we are going to begin with a report of the technical assistance accreditation readiness at the Ulster County Jail. So with that, Dr. Blair, I'll turn it over to you and we can follow along with our pamphlet here.
Okay. I guess I will save us all going through all 13 pages. I guess I want to highlight some of the areas. First, I'd like to say that my colleague and I, we had a very good visit at Ulster County, and folks treated us very nicely, and it was a very pleasant visit, to spend the day there. So, understand that most of the nursing staff had a complete turnover within the last 6 months before our visit. And that the Health Service Administrator had been on board less than a year and the Director of Nursing for about 2 months. I have to say that both of them, at the time of the visit, certainly were heading the Health Services Department in the right direction of where it should be going. That was kind of echoed as we interviewed, because we did interview staff, healthcare staff, we interviewed inmates, and we interviewed security staff. Everyone agreed that things had a positive impact, a positive change from whatever had gone on prior to that made, the turnover so large. One of the areas that there was kind of some questions about was the actual access to care. It was kind of inconsistent. From somebody could wait a half an hour or less to get care, to up to a few days or several days to access some medical care. So that was one area that we asked to that be monitored a little bit more, because there really was so much inconsistency in that area. The receiving screenings were completed within 1 to 2 hours, which is great, but going hand in hand with that is the initial health assessment that needs to be completed within 14 days. A majority of them, the documentation was that the inmate had refused, but there was no refusal signed. And the recommendation there would be that if the inmate is going to refuse care, that really refusal form should be signed, because it kind of protects the agency and the healthcare staff in that area. Most of the records were reviewed, the initial health assessment, which was a concern, and the inmate refusals. Mental health department was actually staffed very well, and they appear to be managed well. There really was no concerns in the area of mental health care. Under infectious disease management, it was appropriate for the facility, but my colleague notes that improvements were needed in chronic disease management and continuity of care, so that just more eyes on chronic disease management of the inmate, and follow through if they went to see specialists, outside providers, or whatever, that information gets shared between the two providers. There were no deaths at the facility in the past 3 years, so that's always a good thing. One of the housing units that was referred to as an infirmary is really not an infirmary, but it was used as a shelter housing for inmates with special needs. Those inmates can't be, they couldn't be appropriately housed in general population, but we didn't find that there really was operating a true infirmary at the facility. And we didn't find any evidence of an annual review of the healthcare policies and procedures and nursing protocols. Actually, the director of nursing was addressing that issue while we were there, and they were going through at the time and updating policies and procedures to meet the new standards. The current manual was based on 2014 standards and was dated 2016, so they needed to be revisited. I don't know if you have questions specific to the visit or if you want me to go through every single standard. And I mean,
we have the sheriff here, so we're just looking over his way to see if he had any questions or wanted to say anything. He's shaking his head no politely. So, but I guess my question would be around the timeline for implementing these changes before the actual accreditation takes place. In other words, this is just a kind of pre-assessment. And then the accreditation will take place a bit later, and there's time to implement and deal with some of these findings. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Between the visit and now, they may have already corrected many of these findings.
Okay.
So, I mean, what we've found is that really it's not major tweaking, but there's some areas just needed to be cleaned up and addressed, and I think they were in the mode of doing that.
Uh-huh.
And like perhaps this some of these issues may not be issues currently.
Okay. Legislator Heppner would like to ask a question.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay.
In your review, was there any look in terms of observing or reviewing the procedures and process in regards to inmates that enter with addiction in terms of, you know, addressing detox and so on?
I can look through the report. I did not specifically look at that. That was part of my, but my colleague may have. And let's see if I can.
Legislator Eckert, I, especially with reference to the chronic disease management,
yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that some of the inmates are dealing with, you know, an addiction problem, and with respect to opioids, and are having to deal with daily medications. And I was curious, and I think Legislator Heppner is curious to find out if that's a process that's managed well, if there are any problems. Any ways to improve?
Right. Let me get to that part of the report here.
I'm looking at the findings on 9. There's some commentary on pharmaceutical operations, medication services.
Yeah, because for, you know, some context, I do know in the not so far past, they did begin providing vitriol for inmates, for example, but that was still kind of pretty new the last I had heard about it.
Right.
It looks like on 11 you addressed asthma. And you say your chronic care guidelines were outdated and inappropriate. That was on 11 at the bottom. And it looks like hypertension, diabetes, lipid management, but not, I don't see any indication of opioid addiction.
Now, but I don't recall that there was, let's see, patients with chronic disease management, right, follow-up times. Infirmary level. No, I don't recall there being nursing treatment protocols exist for inmates undergoing withdrawal. However, the protocols need to be reviewed and updated.
Yeah.
So that would be the only thing with the supervised withdrawal and treatment is that they were there, but some, you know, they need to be reviewed and brought up to current practice.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Do we have any other questions? Did anything, I mean, I know you have these highlights here. It's kind of like a highlight reel. Was there anything that stood out to you that caused you more concern than anything else, or would you characterize these issues as, it seems like you're saying they're very remediable and in effect, you know, minor to moderate, not severe. Was there anything there that really caused you grave concern?
Well, the not grave concerns, but the priority concerns was, again, you know, the access to sick call issue, where the inconsistency is. I mean, trying to get a handle on that people aren't waiting several days for to be seen.
Uh-huh.
And then the only other one is the, again, the admission assessment or the 14-day assessment. If they're in any refusal, I guess, that we're getting the right documentation in the medical record if an inmate isn't refusing. If, you know, if they any, I guess with refusals, period, that they were not being used,
uh-huh.
and they should be, because that protects you and, it protects the facility and it protects everybody that, you know, if I refuse, I should sign that I refused, and if I don't want to sign, then there should be a witness there to indicate that, yes, indeed, I did refuse the care that I was offered.
Right.
Because then, you know, I mean, we all know how litigious the world has become, so.
Right. And now I know you're just noting difficulties. Did you have any sense of why, for example, that there was an inconsistent range in terms of responding to sick calls? Was there... Did you have a sense of why that was occurring, or did you really just see your role as just documenting it?
Well, you know, I don't know if it was a scheduling issue. I mean, from what I observed, I observed sick call. I mean, I went to the housing units, and if people, you know, needed to be seen, it was addressed there in the housing unit. But then if you needed to do more of an invasive type exam, they were brought down to medical. So I don't know if there's a scheduling or transport security issue to get them from the housing unit down to medical to be seen, if that's where the issue lies. Because if I had a cold, they saw me right on the housing unit.
Right.
But if I had a stomach ache that required me to disrobe, there's no place on the housing unit, they'd have to bring me to medical. And I don't know if that's where the disconnect was or not, but
okay.
That's where I would look if I was the administrator there. That's where I'd be looking, is where, why, if they need to be seen in medical, are they not getting down there? So,
okay, I'm gonna let the sheriff have weigh in on this. Go
good.
Go ahead.
Good evening,
sheriff.
Okay.
I know that this happened back in October. I took over about 1 January. I made it my role and job to make sure I know what's going on in the entire facility. I'm looking at your findings, and I appreciate some of the information that you put out for us. Did you actually speak to any of the inmates?
Oh, yes. We interviewed inmates, security staff, and medical staff, and mental health.
Any of those inmates, or did you document their names, and maybe we can follow up on some of the complaints?
I would look back through anybody that had it that really stood out to us. We actually did discuss with medical,
okay,
before we left.
All right.
So they would have been aware of anybody that we actually had a red flare concern over.
And you're right about the nursing staff, and this is something that happens throughout the state. These are vendor companies that we use, and the staff is constantly changing. It's just part, you know, they don't pay a lot, and it's just part of the way the system is. We actually have a new vendor coming on board May 1st, on or about. So, but I appreciate everything that you wrote here. I'm going to take it back with me and take a look at it. And thank you.
I just have one last question.
When
you said there was, you know, that any inmate that stood out and there was kind of a red flag around that inmate's case, can you give us the general nature of the case? Was it something severe like the flu, or was it, you know, I'm still complaining of stomach pains and I haven't received any, you know, any care?
Again, it could have come from the other colleague that was with me, because we were both looking at those kind of issues and interviewed. We had both interviewed inmates. I don't recall directly what it was, but I mean, it would be, I think it would be somebody, somebody that complained of something that should have been seen sooner than we in our professional estimation, you know, thought they should have been seen sooner.
Okay.
But I mean, that would be looking, and a lot of times, after we would interview, if we interview inmates and they come up with something like that, we'll go back and look at their medical record to verify, you know, is it fact or fiction? Because they can tell us anything in an interview, but, you know, it may not indicate the same thing in their medical record.
Right.
So.
That was my last question, but I have one more. And this is just very general question. I'm wondering if you have had any experience or any thoughts about prime care.
I do not have any knowledge about prime care.
Okay. Just curious, I thought we might probe you and find that, you know, you had some great insight, so I just thought I'd take a stab. Okay, very well. Is there any other questions? Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We have the full report in front of us, and that's on the record, I believe. So, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. And if you have any other questions, I'm sure, you know, we can arrange to, you know, try to clear things up. But like I said, I really think the two administrators you've had there that we dealt with all day, even from every level, people indicated they were heading in the right direction. So, like I said, many of these things may be corrected already. I don't know.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Have a wonderful evening.
All right. Good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, next on the agenda is a status update on the Ulster County Fire Training Center. We have Supervisor Jim Quigley, I saw him, he's over there, representing the town of Ulster. We have Frank Banks, who is the president of the UC Fire Advisory Board. Everett Erickson, is Everett here? Everett, nice to meet you. I think you spoke at the last legislative meeting, is that correct?
I spoke a couple.
Okay. Yeah. And you are the Division of Fire Services for the UC Emergency Management Communications Department, and of course Dennis Doyle. So I thought what we might do is give the floor to Dennis to talk about fire training and then turn it over to you.
For the record?
Yes.
Jared Matz is here. He is the president of the Fire Chiefs Association of Ulster County.
Welcome.
Jeremiah McDonough is the fire chief of Spring Lake Fire District in the town of Ulster.
Thank you for coming. So Dennis, I'll turn it over to you and then we can
take questions. Chair, and thank the committee for this opportunity. My name is Dennis Doyle. For those of you that don't know me, I'm the planning director. I'm going to ask Everett and Steve to join me as well so that we do this together because they can answer the fire service questions. I can sort of answer some of the planning questions in terms of how we got here and how we didn't get here. I apologize for anybody that I'm not facing. I think this will work. We hope it does. But we'll see. Before I start the presentation, I just want to give you a sort of an update in terms of how we got here. I think that's kind of important. Several years ago, back in 2016, 2015, 2016, there was a discussion that began in terms of the needs of the fire service with respect to training facilities. It was a decades-old discussion that basically said that there was a significant amount of training needs that were being unmet or being met elsewhere for the fire services, and there was an underinvestment in the fire services training facilities. That was coupled with the fact that the fire training requirements had changed significantly. The number of hours required in terms of firefighter one classes, et cetera, had changed to the point where there was an ongoing significant commitment by the firefighters themselves. There was a committee formed at that particular time. They looked around the county for various sites, and they chose a site that was adjacent to the college campus in the town of Marbletown. And we began a process. At that point in time, the planning department was not involved. When the site was chosen, there was a universal dislike for the site by the neighbors, and there was a petition work that got done, and there was a substantial opposition to the site. The legislature heard that opposition and began to look at whether or not there were alternatives. They brought the planning department in and asked us to essentially do some alternative analysis. We put out an RFP. We hired a consulting firm to begin an alternative sites analysis. We did an alternative sites analysis, presented it to the legislature in 2017. We looked at about 65 sites around the county. We worked with a committee of the fire services and a consultant firm, both a landscape architect and civil engineering folks, to do that site analysis. And as part of that, a couple of things came out. The number one thing I think that came out was a reinforcement of the need that the number one priority from the fire services was a burn building, and access to a burn building. The number two priority, or the number two thing that I think that came out was when we looked at location, quite frankly, the SUNY Ulster site or the Marbletown site was an appropriate location to consider given the density of the fire. If you look at fire district maps in the county, the density of the fire districts in that area, there's somewhere in a neighborhood of 7 to 9 districts within a 5-mile radius of that site. The third thing I think that came out was, given the size of the county, that it made sense to look at this not as a single site, which was the original discussion, but more as a series of sites or a shared fire service network that would allow the fire services in the north. This county is 38 miles north-south and 38 miles east-west, and it's the size of the state of Rhode Island, just a little bit smaller than the state of Rhode Island. So when you start looking at this, you start providing for that service, the thought was we could do it in a little bit more distributed pattern. We began to look at the sites that we narrowed down were between north Route 299 on the south, 199 on the 199 in the north, and 299 in the south. So basically New Paltz to the town of Ulster. And we looked at access to those sites. So we weren't on off of any local road systems, et cetera, on county roads or access from state roads. That led us to the conclusion that we had an opportunity to provide non-burn facilities and some other training opportunities at the SUNY Ulster site, provide burn facilities at the town of Ulster site, and I'll show you where that site is, and also be able to work with the fire company, in southern Ulster County, which is the Walker Valley Fire Company, which had an existing burn building down there, so that those folks that are in the far south of the county could have access to a burn facility as well. I think this is going to work. Okay. So we're going to focus tonight on a discussion with regard to the town of Ulster site. And for those of you that don't know where it is, I'm going to take these off, so excuse me. That don't know where these is, this is 199 going across the Hudson River, town of Ulster commercial strip in this area. This is the area that we're looking at. Right in here, it's about 50-some acres, which are... We're only looking at this area that's west of Ulster Landing Road, 250 Ulster Landing Road. Okay. So when you go in and you start to look at the site, there's an existing fire training facility at the site. That existed. We started a conversation with the town of Ulster and the fire services that currently built this facility several years ago in terms of what are they amenable to the county essentially assuming some responsibility for this system and improving it significantly. We were able to work out an easement language for fire training services with the town of Ulster, and we worked out an intermunicipal agreement in terms of how the site could be used both by the town from the town of Ulster standpoint, also with the fire services that currently use the site. And this area right in here that you see right in here, does this work? Yes, it doesn't. Right in here is a law enforcement shooting range, and so we had to coexist with this law enforcement shooting range. So to take you around the site, this is the existing administration building, existing tower structure, existing burn structure. There is in here now a new building, and that's a storage building. There's a storage building over here. And the area you see outlined in red is a disturbed area that we're looking at in terms of our facilities right now. The legislature was able to execute the easement that is filed, so we do have a fire training easement on this site currently. In addition, the legislature at last meeting adopted a finding with respect to the environmental impact associated with that. With that finding in place, the county was able to go out and do some tree cutting in here within the tree cutting window that ended yesterday. So we have an endangered species concern on the site, which is the Indiana bat and the northern long-eared bat. So we had to get those down before the 1st of April. Those trees came down before the 1st of April, which allows us to essentially move on and continue on with respect to the construction of the project. I just want to give you a sense of where this is a 2016 base air photo. That's what the site looked like in 2004. So that'll give you an idea of how much has changed relative to 2016 to 2004. So when you look at where the areas that we're mostly concentrated on, it's right in this area right here. That's where most of our development activity is going to take place. This area over here has been cleared because we have to do some stormwater work in those particular in that particular area. Questions? Okay. So I'm going to try to run you through the site, just some pictures to give you some opportunities to take a look at what the site looks like for those that haven't visited the site. This is looking down at the shooting range. They shoot into this area here. This is the 100-yard range. We're actually going to be using a portion of this range and doing some improvements to the Town of Ulster shooting range, at least this section of it, as part of our access. Our access road will be in here. If you're looking in this area up in here, that's where most of our development will take place. This gives you an aerial view looking down again. This is a road coming in, a corner of the administration building. You see some septic systems in here. The actual septic, believe it or not, the actual septic area is over in this wooded area. Hasn't been maintained. We did do some tests on this. We do have a working system, septic system, and it's one of the things that we do not have to improve on this site. There's that 100-yard range. Again, over here is the area that you're looking at that we'll be doing the improvements on. We'll also be doing some improvements right through this area on out through here. You can see this alligator cracking in here in terms of the, and you'll see another picture of this in terms of the condition of the existing pavement area. This is the back of the administration building. We're going to be closing these doors off, changing this out. We'll be rebuilding these decks. This will come out. There's going to be some window locations in here. These decks will come off. The decks will come off in the front. In addition, we're looking at a roof that probably has maybe 2 or 3 years worth of life left in it. Currently, we're thinking we're going to replace that roof. There are actually some leaks inside the building. So the thought now is that we'll replace that roof rather than try to fix the leaks while we're mobilized with our contractor's force. Question.
I do. Is this the building that you're talking about putting over $1 million into?
This is the building that we're currently looking at how we're going to bring it up to code. I can't tell you what the cost is.
Okay.
We have plans for it. This is a condition of some of the blacktop in this area. You can see that it's underlain. It has some drainage issues associated with it. This blacktop and all the subbase will be completely removed and repaved. This is the existing, that's that new storage building I mentioned. This is that existing tower that we have there. That tower is scheduled for demolition, and we're going to use and rebuild the pad that it sits on, and that will be an area that the fire service will use for car extrication.
I just want to go back to the legislator's question there. The administration building is classrooms. I believe you're talking about the burn building itself that we would use for training, live fire training.
Okay, so all of the 4.5 will be going into the fire training building?
No, it's going to be spread out amongst the site.
Okay. All right. We've done all of our necessary environmental work. I put this slide in here to show you that the site, even though it looks wide open, is not. In addition, whenever you see cattails on the site or evidence of wetland vegetation, we get concerned about wetlands, so we did do a wetlands delineation on the site. You can see substantial amounts of wetlands all around us. These have now been surveyed, and they're on our sets of plans. And the current proposal, actually not the current proposal, the proposal as it stands now, will not impact any of the state or federally regulated wetlands. There are no state regulated wetlands on the site, but there are federally regulated wetlands on the site. We will do no disturbance on any wetland area.
Can I ask what, just out of curiosity, what is this demarcating?
It's just like a line.
This looks like a Greek letter. Is that something I don't...
Yeah, the situation you have, I couldn't tell you, but right now all of these are just demarcations of the areas that they worked in terms of delineation. Because originally when we looked at this, we actually looked at this area down here as to whether or not we could put the facility down here. We looked at an area up here as well as this area here.
I just didn't understand the
DP. Yeah, I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Questions?
Sure.
Where's your existing septic system in reference to this?
It's right in here.
And right is this now. Municipal water?
No.
Where's your well?
Well is over in this location right here.
In reserve.
We've identified, when you see the plans, we'll show you the identified area. Let me go to the plans. Yeah. I think I can direct some questions a little bit better. But we're at 60%. In terms of our design submissions, it gives you a sense of the drawing lists that are out here. There's a substantial amount of effort that we've already accomplished in terms of where we are. We've done quite a bit of geotech work, drilling and boring on the site, because it is a poor. There are poor soils on this site. It's a former clay mine, so we do have. We were really concerned about the structural capabilities of the soil, so we ordered a substantial amount of geotech. Work that was more recently, we actually did more geotech work that was completed in the 19th of March. That work was done. So looking at the site, this is the existing, there's a existing road that comes in here, comes around, that's the administration building, that's the range. You can see the wetlands outlined on here. Why that doesn't work, but it doesn't. Outlined on here, and then you also, this is the area primary of area where we're looking at. That's that 100-yard area right in there. Tower building, storage building, old burn building. So looking at that, one of the first things I want to show you is well, what are we going to do with some of that poor blacktop area? This area up in here that has that hatch pattern in it, that would be completely replaced. So that means it's actually considered new disturbed area, so we have to deal with the stormwater associated with that, because we're not just repaving it over. This area in here will just be repaved.
You're not going to repave the current pavement and do permeable?
No.
You are repaving it?
No. We're going to repave it. We're not doing permeable pavement.
No permeable pavement.
That's correct. Okay. To be frank with you, permeable pavement is a waste on this site because of the clay subsoil.
Yeah, it wouldn't perk anyway.
It won't go down. It won't get the groundwater.
But that's an area where you're dealing with stormwater.
I'll show you where the stormwater is going to go. We have designs for stormwater. I'll show you where the stormwater is going to go. So this is an overview of the various layouts for the training facilities. So as you move into the site, you can see we have a pavilion here. The pavilion will house remnants of a new location for the law enforcement 100-yard facility and necessary storage facilities, something called a cascade system. And a cascade system is essentially a system that will allow the firefighters to refill their air bottles for part of their training facilities. And then this area is just a pavilion area for the firefighters that are on the site to essentially get undercover and also to watch the training is taking place. As we move around the site, this is all new pavement in here, and it's going to be regraded, and I'll show you that. Let me just zoom in on that. I think I can zoom in on that. So this is a zoom in on where you're looking at. You can see the size of these structures, 52 by 26 on the pavilion. These are 30% drawings. These may change. We may move to a little bit larger pavilion because it's standard size versus non-standard size. Propane tank in this area, car fire pad, propane pad, jump in here anytime you want.
Okay, so we're starting up top at the pavilion. Okay, we have the pavilion. The pavilion's used to keep the students out of poor weather, out of the sun as well. You know, they're in their turnout gear and so on. We'll have rainy days and so on, and we continuously train no matter what the weather is. So to keep them out of the sun for conversation and so on, it's a facility that we could eat outside. That centerpiece right there, like Dennis was saying, that's going to be the cascade system. It's important that, you know, on these training days, we're able to fill their SCBAs. That takes up a lot of time, and not having a system there and having to bring all the bottles from a department while they're going to go through 2-3 bottles at it sometimes is actually going to cut back on their training. We have a lot of departments that are traveling. You take, like, your jurisdiction, Walker Valley, having to travel all the way up there, and, I mean, it's a lot. It's very time-consuming. So we want them to be able to get the most out of the facility at one time. And then moving over to the right again, Dennis mentioned, we're going to have the shooting range, the shooting, that's the 100-yard line, which is being relocated for the law enforcement. And right behind that is a storage area for them, so they could store some of their items in there as well.
I guess some fairly large air things that they use to actually have, they have little...
Brass cleanup.
Yeah, they pick up their brass cases.
Moving counterclockwise around the site, the next item you see is the burn facility right there in the middle. Okay. That's a 33 by 58 building, which is fairly large. Proposed a 3-story building. On top of that third story, there's 2 vent holes. And basically what we're looking to do is give a lot of versatile training. Currently, you know, training is getting harder and harder to conduct for the volunteer fire service. There's 50 departments in Ulster County, 49 of which are volunteer. We have we just did a survey, and with 80% participation from the departments in Ulster County, we're looking at just under 1,700 volunteers. We need to continuously train this. New York State actually did a survey, did a review statewide, and to replace the volunteer fire service, you're looking into billions, right? So, I mean, yeah, it's very cost-effective to keep our volunteers. They do a great job. What we need to do is keep them constantly trained. Training requirements are getting harder. OSHA is in the middle of, they actually just rewrote it, hasn't been adopted yet, 1910-134, which is the standard for the fire brigade, and it's going to get harder and harder to train our volunteers. So we need to have a place where we can train them, and the county instructors and state instructors can help get this training done. So the versatility of this building allows us to offer a multitude of different scenarios at one time. We could have a multitude of departments on site training at one time, which really helps out. It doesn't limit, okay, well, tonight, you know, we're going to give it to Spring Lake. Tomorrow night, we're going to give it to Highland. We can have multiple departments on-site training at one time, which is really, really important. And it allows us to train together as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
For the burn facility, just based off discussions I've had with my local departments, at any point, was there any discussion of variating from 3 stories?
So, yes. So it's proposed a 3-story building. There is a variation to go to a 2-story building.
Because they did, you know, I've heard multiple concerns about that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I mean, we're looking at a 3-story building to allow for the versatility. Buildings are being built up nowadays instead of out, you know, so having the 3-story is very important.
What would be the reason to go to 2 stories? Just, would it be strictly financial?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So within this building, this is a concrete structure with high temperature tiles.
And you're going to see some pictures.
And you're going to see some pictures. And maybe I'll go into a little bit more of the building, the structure of the building, when we get to that pictures, because it'll be easier for you to understand.
I'm sorry, you said it's concrete.
It's a concrete building, yep. Yeah. But the layout of the building, I'll get to that when we see those pictures, because it'll be easier for you to understand instead of me trying to paint that picture for you, if that's okay. Moving counterclockwise around the site, that's a propane tank. And basically what that's going to be used is for advancing lines on a ruptured propane tank, right? That's a bought prop that's going to be filled, that's going to be fed by the propane tank that's across the site that Dennis pointed out earlier. Moving counterclockwise again is going to be a pad for vehicle fire. That's another prop that would be purchased to do vehicle fire training. And then we have 4 Connex boxes there. That's for storage. One is for storage of hay. The other one's for pallets. The other one is for we have plywood OSB for the flashover container or fire behavior lab. And then the other two are for just additional storage that we need for the site for more props and so on. You know, mannequins and other things that we'll need. The flashover container, or more known as the fire behavior lab, we can assist in teaching fire behavior in that. Very important. And another reason why we're really looking at that concrete structure with high temperature tiles is fire behavior is our number one priority when we're teaching live fire training. You know, it's one thing to get a little smoke in the building, but that's not enough. We really need to look at fire behavior. The structures nowadays, there's those environmental laws that are ensuring that the structures are built tighter, all right? So, you know, when you're in this wintertime, when you're heating your house, you're not letting all your heat out. Air conditioning during the summer, you're not letting all your AC out, you know, so they're built more environmental friendly. What's happening with that is, when a fire starts inside the house, it's retaining the smoke. When we show up, you know, we introduce the oxygen, then the fire is going to take off. So being able to retain that smoke within these types of structure helps us a lot about teaching fire behavior. You know, looking at that, the fire tetrahedron, and showing those different sides and being able to play with that fire tetrahedron and really show the firefighters what happens when you eliminate one of these sides, what occurs. And that's really something that we need to focus on in our live fire training. You know, it's great to stretch a hose line, but we can do hose lines anywhere. We need to teach them how to stretch a hose line within this building. And that's another reason we're looking at this building, because it's very versatile, where we can burn pretty much anywhere within the building except for the stairwells and a couple spots in the hallway. We can burn everywhere, which...
Laura has a question.
Okay, which really gives us a lot of versatility when it comes to the different scenarios. You know, there's burn buildings out there that their burn rooms are one or two, three burn rooms. Well, what's that mean over the next 20, 30 years, where you're stretching the hose line into the same room over and over again? Every fire that we go to is different, and stretching that hose line into the first floor burn room, or the second floor burn room, or the third floor burn room, those same rooms over and over again, what are you teaching them? You know, we're only going to be as good as the training that we have. You know, we're going to have to fall back onto that training. So it's very important that we have a lot of versatility, and that we can throw a lot of different scenarios at our firefighters. Yes,
Laura,
ma'am.
Did you want to jump in?
I do. Actually, it revolves around training. There's two questions. One is, it's my understanding, since the funding is going through this SUNY campus, are you going to have any non-volunteer firefighters and, in essence, students that will be taking some of these classes?
So it all depends on the class. So in order to take a live fire class, the college itself would have to come up with a program and would have to ensure that there was insurance for that firefighter. What a lot of colleges have done in the past is that they need to be a volunteer in order to take this class. You know, so you look at other colleges, and you know, they'll have a firefighter one national standard course, and they allow them to take the class, but they're a volunteer, because you know, the gear has to come from somewhere. The gear is pretty expensive, you know, the SCBAs and so on. You know, having the insurance if someone were to get hurt, you know, so that insurance is covered by their department.
Legislative petite raises a good point. So where's the money coming from? So what we have done is we reached out to the state education department through the SUNY Ulster, and we have an appropriation for 50% of a match, generally 50% of the match, depends sometimes, for a $4.5 million budget. So you have about $2.6 million of that, which means that the college has an interest in the site, and we'll have to develop the necessary agreements between the college and the county with respect to that, similar to what we did for Strzok. We have a similar arrangement with regard to Strzok. But that's an important point to know. And continuing on in here, this is actually a dumpster facility, which actually is below grade, so that what ends up happening as you come down through here, you can see dump your trash and waste coming out of these facilities here into that dumpster, and then provided a new road system to pick that up. Now this area...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
This area in here, as I discussed before, and you'll start to see it in the grading plans, is being reserved for stormwater, and you can see some of those connections and outflows into here. We're also picking up some stormwater that's coming off that new paved area up there, as well as moving the stormwater through here, and I'll show you those grading plans. Go ahead.
And then just the last thing after the dumpsters, you have that a visual wall there, mm-hmm. that's a visual barrier from the site, from the firing range itself. So between the storage, the flashover container, and then the wall, that helps give a visual barrier from the site itself.
And most importantly, what this 100-yard facility, you can start to see that it doesn't impinge on the area that's used for training. We provided some security up in here with respect to cow gates, yep. but that 100-yard facility will shoot down to the training range in this location.
And we've had numerous conversations with the chief of police in the town of Ulster regarding the firing range itself to ensure that their proper safety. Discussion has been, and this is down the road, but discussion has already been had regarding their use of the firing range and how, ensuring that things won't overlap fire training, and their training. That's why that cow gate is up the top. If they're going to be using the fire range, they close that cow gate, firearms training in progress. So no one goes beyond that point. It's just going to be the officers. They have range officers on site when they're doing their training. They run, I believe it's a 1-to-4 ratio for instructor to officers on the line. So they're going to have their range officers that are going to be in charge of safety, and all officers are in charge of safety on the firing range, honestly. So we've been having lots of communication with them to ensure that everything comes together.
So like everything else in Ulster County, it's very difficult to find a flat site. The site is not flat. And so when you start looking at, when you start looking at what we have to do in terms to manage the site, in terms of cut and fill, it's really, the site is about the flattest portion of this site that we could find. Even with that, you're starting to see some changes with respect to contours. Most of the site is in fill, which is good for us because of the soil conditions. But there is some cut up in this area through here. There is some cut in here. When you move down through this site, we're going to have a retaining wall that runs around here that gradually peters out in this area. And that retaining wall is about 7.5 to 8 feet high in that location. So you can see we're moving fill into here, and we'll fill it in lifts. And then this is actually almost on baseline. That's what's out there now. But we'll add height around it to create that storage facility for stormwater. Clay actually makes a good thing to use around stormwater ponds because of its impervious nature. And then we'll move that stormwater out to a diffuser in here. The calculations have been done. We're working on something called a stormwater pollution prevention plan. We're starting to see that come together in draft form. But you'll get a sense of the earthwork that's taking place around this site. About 2 acres down in here with some additional work over here. And then when you look at the total disturbed area, and please don't hold me, somebody don't say you only said it was 2 acres, but somewhere in a neighborhood of around 3 acres of disturbed area that we're looking at when we start adding into this new topsoil, the new asphalt areas we have to put in up here. Mm-hmm. Any questions? All right, we're going to go into this is looking at some of the stormwater work. This is literally looking at some of the areas where we're doing erosion and sediment control. You see erosion and sediment control down here and some of the other erosion and sediment control structures that will be in. These are at 60%. They get a lot more detail when you move to 90%. Just to show you some of the details that we're currently working out, these are pavement details, drainage details, et cetera, and there's all heavy-duty pavement. Again, this is erosion and sediment control details that we're currently working out. This gives you a look at the stormwater facilities that I just talked to you about, that stormwater pond, in terms of what that is, outlet structures, calculations associated with that. And then I want to turn to the administration building itself. We did an initial code review on the administration building. The administration building has some code problems, and we're going to have to correct them in order to use the building. This basically shows that we have the ways to get in and out of the building. I won't spend a lot of time on here. This is what we're going to look at in terms of the basement building. The basement building now is just simply one big room to here. a mechanical room, which takes up most of this area, and then those areas in here, it's pretty undeveloped. We won't touch this area in here. We're going to rebuild the existing bathroom facilities and showers, create a small training room down in the basement, and that will be a
dirty classroom. So I just want to expand on this right here, where the storage facility, where the lockers are for the instructors, and
right.
the dirty classroom. One of the things that we thought of and we wanted to concentrate on is trying to keep the facility clean and keep carcinogens out of the upstairs and so on. One of the causes of firefighter deaths nowadays is cancer. You know, so being able to have a separate area to keep their gear for live burning for the instructors in that one area, so they're not putting it in their personal vehicles and so on, mm-hmm. and then it's getting, the carcinogens are getting caught up in their vehicles, and they're putting their family and so on in there. And the classroom itself, that if we need to take the students into the classroom afterwards, after some training, they're going into that dirty classroom. They're not going to be going upstairs. The layout of this classroom is concrete floors for easy cleanup. They're not going upstairs into the carpeted classrooms and so on. So it's a dirty classroom. Also, it allows the police officers to have a dirty classroom. If they need to do something with firearms or something like that, they could go into the downstairs classroom and do things with their firearms, clean their firearms, take them apart. So they're not doing it in the clean classrooms upstairs.
So small office structure, additional storage on this side, and looking at trying to get some light into that basement, since I have an exposed basement on the back side, putting some windows high up so that we can get some light in those offices and classrooms. Questions?
Are you putting washers and dryers in there?
No.
No, because those run about $10,000 a piece,
no.
So 51 companies having to buy those gets a little pricey.
Well, a lot of departments have washers and dryers. They're called gear extractors. So they have them, they wash them, and then they have they'll have dryers. Not every department has them, but you know, there are grants out there for them to, in order to purchase them. A lot of departments, you know, they work with other departments so they can wash their gear and dry their gear. But we weren't looking to put them in here.
In order for us to continue to use the existing septic system, we have to file with the county health department and indicate to them that the proposed use is no more intense than the existing use in terms of water use.
And just to touch on that too, when it comes to training, state OFPC just put out a procedure that actually went into effect today. They're issuing 3 kits to each county in New York State for cleaning gear. So basically what's going to happen is after their live fire training, they'll get washed down. Their gear would go into a plastic bag and be closed up so they can bring that back to their firehouse. So they're not putting it back on the apparatus, sitting in the seats and so on, and then they can get it cleaned at their firehouse.
The other thing that we're going to be doing is we've done the necessary tests on the water supply system. The water supply system PFOA test, which is a known carcinogen. There was POFA, evidence of PFOA sites used on this site. There is trace PFOAs in this water supply. It will meet the current standard for PFOAs, and it will meet the proposed standard. We're less than 2 parts per trillion. And the current standard is 70, the proposed standard is 10. We also tested the water supply site to see whether it would meet public health standards. It will meet public health standards. This is by definition a public water supply because of the use that currently takes place in the building. The current use in the building does not meet those standards. It needs a chlorination or an ozone facility on it, so the current use will not meet the standards right now as a public water supply. Any questions?
And no PFOA foam training is being proposed on that site at all.
Okay.
What used to go on there that there was PFOA?
Sorry?
Why is there PFOAs now?
It was used in the past.
Oh, okay. Fall training.
Used in the past.
Okay, true.
This is the first floor plan? Everett?
Yep, so first floor plan, so the first classroom, the bigger classroom there is a 30-person.
Here's the entrance right off the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
just so you know.
So you come into the entrance, so you have a 30-person classroom, which is the bigger classroom. On the back side are closets. One of those closets will be dedicated to AV and IT. And then your next room over is a smaller classroom, 24-person classroom. That would, you know, be set up with AV as well, but everything is ran out of the one AV IT closet. There's a little kitchen above the smaller classroom. common area. We have the bathroom facilities and the hallway that leads downstairs. Off the back side of the classrooms, you have the deck that leads down, walkway all the way down to the training grounds as well.
So looking at this, what you need to understand is that there are some code compliance issues with respect to floor loading here. So when we look at floor joists and we look at the floor loading, we have some work that we have to do on those floor joists in order to bring it up to code so it can stand to floor loading. Altogether, when you look at this building in terms of what's there now and versus what's going to have to be done to it, it's nearly a complete gut of the building. The only thing we'll probably leave alone is the kitchen facility, all new decking with composite decking. This area would be gutted. The downstairs area, there's not much there, so that's just a build rather than a gut. We do have some leaks in the roof on here, so we're proposing to replace the roof. I talked to you a little bit about that. The stairwells are currently non-compliant with respect to that. We're going to leave those alone because we can make access work off the basement without using the stairwell and off the top without using the stairwell. So we don't have to make that compliant. We've had that discussion with our safety officer that's going to issue the building permit, and they've agreed so far that we will not have to make the stairwell compliant. Roof replacement, simple, ice shielding on the roof, looking at roof replacement, those details. Deck replacement, the deck replacement will be composite decking. We've taken a look at whether or not we should use composite or straight pressure treated. The difference in cost is not worth the life on it. It will be pressure treated. There's some details on the decking and railing.
You just said it'll be composite or pressure treated?
No, we looked at the difference in cost. It's better to go with composite.
Right, okay.
Yeah. There's an initial cost, but the overall maintenance cost. Or length of life is will make the difference in terms of cost. These are details on decking. This is a detail of the. Now I pulled out of this presentation substantial amounts of details with respect to air conditioning, with regard to electrical work, plumbing, HVAC loading, all of that. Mm-hmm. You should know that the boiler is at the end of its useful life. It's about three years from the end of its useful life. The fin tubes in the building are, not standard fin tubes. We actually have hot water systems hooked up with Plex, which you don't do. So we have to do some work on those. So you're going to get a new boiler, new fin tubes, new split air conditioning systems associated with this, and all the necessary electrical work that has to be done to accommodate the new classroom facilities. Okay. I'm sorry. I wanted to get this is a layout of that pavilion area, so you have a sense of what's out there. This is the room that is the cascade system, storage behind that for general storage for the police officer. We actually have added a door in here so that the police have two ways to get into their storage facility. And the shooting tables will be for the community. It's much easier for quite frankly, to buy shooting tables. Than for us to actually build them. And this is open to the front. None of this is enclosed. Details of plumbing, I'm just going to run through that real quickly. And then I want to just have a discussion with you. I'm going to show you the burn building. I'm going to run through these relatively quickly. Ever, if you want to say anything, let me know. There's pictures of this. So the first thing you're looking at, this is what a two-story burn building looks like. There's various elevation differences you can see. So I pulled some of the details out of that, but this will give you a sense of how the size and mass of a two-story building with the necessary stair towers, various sizes on this. Again, two-story building, all different locations. You can see there's different elevations on the bottom of that. This is the actual floor layouts. It's important to note how the tiling is done on these buildings to protect the structural components, whereas the individual walls are sacrificial.
So this is where I was explaining the burn building itself. Okay, so if you look inside, there's three load-bearing pillars inside the structure, and then there's one wall load-bearing for the stairwell. Okay, everything else load-bearing is actually exterior. What that allows us to do is just tile the ceilings, okay, fire brick on the floor, and those three pillars and that one wall, those get this high temperature tile, right? The walls themselves are just block wall. All right, so if a block were to crack, it just gets knocked out and a new block goes in. The concrete buildings, they do better at retaining the heat and the smoke. It's nothing against the metal buildings, but the concrete buildings just they do it a lot better. With the metal buildings, a lot of that smoke escapes, and it's hard to retain the heat. The tiles themselves, there's a patchinite tile in a metal building that it doesn't retain the heat as these high temperature tiles do. We want to be able to not make a fire super hot, but we want to try to retain some heat. And when we advance a hose line, we want to teach them proper stream usage to where they're using a straight stream and not a fog stream, so they're not creating a lot of steam. Our gear doesn't protect us from street steam, so we want to go in with that straight stream to knock that fire down. And we're able to do that in this type of building. In the other buildings, it's a little harder. You start to use fog nozzles, and then you just get into really bad tactics.
So this will give you the location of burn rooms in that two-story building, some more details on the two-story building. We're going to switch over and show you what a three-story building looks like. This is a three-story building. This is the... you're looking at some of the details. It's similar to the one that's built in Orange County, but Everett, working with the fire service folks, essentially has come up with some rather unique changes.
Yeah, so just so you're aware, I've met with some people from the initial task force that was put together by the Pass County Executive. I meet with our county and state fire instructors, and I meet with the deputy fire coordinators and individually, and we look at what this structure, what needs to be included. So we did take the layout of Orange County, and we did modify it a little bit to help meet the, you know, what we were looking at. As Dennis moves through the slide there, I'll kind of show you that.
Okay. In my understanding, the actual engineering is a specialty company that comes out of
Virginia,
yeah, that does the design work for this. All they do.
Yeah, they design fire training buildings all over the world. All over the world.
And they've made some changes since they actually constructed the Orange County building, and they're reflected.
Correct.
In our design.
And that was to meet NFPA 1402, okay, which is the standard to live fire training facilities themselves.
I think they also moved some of the columns outside the building so they didn't have to protect them inside the building.
Correct. There's some columns on the outside that where they bump into the building, and what they would do is they would have to build around those columns. They were able to move them out a little bit more, so it was easier to protect them and more cost effective.
So this will give you the again looks. This is an actual chute so that when you need to get rid of waste, it goes right into an area, right in a wheelbarrow or a small container underneath the building, so you don't have to pick it up. Another look at a different side of that. You can see some details here. There's also a bailout. Yeah,
so there's two cutouts on the roof itself. There's one one's on a pitched roof, which is right over one of the fire rooms, so you can ventilate over the fire rooms. And then the second one is on a flat roof over a fire room as well, so you're able to do flat roof ventilation over the fire room. So what we're able to teach them is while a coordinated attack on a fire, so the hose line gets advanced, the hose team calls for ventilation, the vent team that's on the roof then starts to vent instead of a vent team going and venting and possibly killing the interior crew because they're venting at the wrong time or they're venting in the wrong location. So we work on that communication, attack and ventilation at the same time.
So again, here's remember those three columns you saw in a two-story building? You're seeing the similar three columns in the three-story building.
The biggest change to the facility from Orange County is the first floor. What we tried to do is, if you're looking at this, the side to everything to the left, from the middle to the left, was one big open area in Orange County.
Here.
And what we tried to do was try to come up with a ranch-style layout for the first floor. There's
so
still a lot
garage,
of
right?
But so that one portion right there is the garage up top, and then everything else is kind of a ranch style
bedroom
layout.
Yeah. Okay.
Bedrooms, bathrooms, mm-hmm. Kitchen, and so on.
All right. Burn room facilities again. Show the burn rooms, and I just Again, looking at the burn rooms, this is the, goes to the third floor. You see that opening here, so now you're on the third floor. I wanted to give you a sense of scale and the mass of these kinds of buildings. So when you think about these buildings and you look at them in plan sections, I don't get a sense that you have an idea of how big they are, A, and how massive they are. We're pulling column loads on this building that is 100, you're not engineers, but if you want to look something up, look up what a kip is and look at your column loadings. We're looking at column loadings on some of these interior, on some of these interior columns in the 140 to 150 kips, which is really a significant column loading that we have to bear on the soil type, which means we have to get the bedrock in order to support the building. That's Orange County. That's the building you're looking at in Orange County. That's the three-story building. It's a little elongated because of the picture, but that'll give you a sense of what that building looks like. Again, looking at it in another different angle, you can see the outside. Looking at this, Everett, you want to jump in on this?
So basically, you can see the load-bearing pillars on the outside of the building here. The pitched roof is just to the left. To the left a little bit more, it's not in the picture.
It's right out there.
But that flat roof area there, that's for rappelling. There's hooks up top for rappelling hooks for those that do a lot of rope. You have your windows. Those are burn rooms. That's your front entrance up right there.
Yep.
Those openings along the bottom, those are scuppers. That helps. That's twofold right there. That helps with the water drainage, okay? And it also helps with getting a little air in there as well.
So just get an idea of the bay sizes here and how big these buildings are, they're not visually massive, they're also massive in terms of the construction to withstand the heat and the activity that takes place within the building itself. This is the other end of that three-story building.
You can see the pitched roof right there.
This one right here.
All right. You have a landing right over the first floor, okay? You have stairwell in the rear that goes all the way up to the roof, actually. And then there's a second stairwell on the other side that just goes to the first floor, and you're able to simulate basement fires off of that.
Okay. Looking at some details.
Okay, yep, those are your anchor points, okay, on the roof. That right there, that first cutoff, that's the pitched roof ventilation. So basically you open those doors up, and you would have basically there'd be a piece of, you could drop a piece of plywood in there, and you would end up cutting the plywood over the fire.
And then this is that area.
That's the gate that opens up to allow you to throw ladders to the roof and get up there, throw your roof ladder up to the top and work through your ventilation.
So I need to warn you about the next picture. So with some trepidation, I'm going to show that next picture. I have to say that Everett was not working for Ulster County when we visited the site. He's a little bit more casual than he is tonight, but that'll give you a sense. We were down there 2017. We visited
early 2007, like summer 2017, because I started October 2007.
But anyway, I thought I would end with that.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
That way it stays up there the whole time.
Yeah.
Yes. When in the process will you make the determination between a third and a two-story?
Well, the current way that we're going to bid this is a base bid of three stories with a deduct alternate of two stories. We'll see what the bids come in. We'll present those and say, what do you want to do? The current estimate between three stories and two stories from our consulting firm is about $700,000.
To Dennis's point, I think to Jonathan's question, I think that what that comes down to when that comes forward is a policy decision, a funding decision that's going to come to the legislature. And one thing I think that it's going to be important for us to use in our process on that is, you don't build for today's needs, you build for tomorrow's needs. And if we're going to build a building that's got a 30-year useful life, we can't be thinking about what we might need now. I've talked to some fire instructors who say, we don't really need a third floor it'd be good to have it. We would rather have three floors than two floors, but we don't need it right now. But it's not to say that in 15 years we're not going to need it. And it's going to be way more expensive to build on than it is going to be to build now. And a 20-year bond, you know, on $700,000 is going to be somewhere in the area of $35,000
to $40,000
a year.
And to Legislator Rock's point, we actually looked at the idea of could we build a two-story building, provide the necessary room on site that would allow us to come back later and build a structure or tower next to it. And by the time you went through with all the additional design work you would have to do, all the additional foundation work you would have to do, and then the difficulty of marrying the two up versus separating them out, the consultants came back and said, you're probably better off on a costing basis if you're thinking about doing this is to doing it now rather than doing it later.
And just if I could just add on to Everett's point from earlier, you know, on the value to the county, to our communities of volunteers, you know, it's to me, it's a no-brainer to make sure that our volunteers have what they need to train now rather than have to worry about it later. And, you know, as he said, the training, you know, State OFPC, NFPA, they're all, you know, they're constantly making it more difficult to train firefighters.
What is the projected life of this building? And
we're looking at 25, 30-year.
Will it survive the life of the bond and then some?
I mean, we're not going to bond for longer than 20 years. So if they're saying 25 if they're saying 25 to 30 years on the useful life, it'll survive the bond.
That Orange County facility was built in 91.
No. Orange County's 6 years old. It's only 6 years old.
I think she's talking about the old building next to it.
Yeah. Oh, it might be one of the older buildings next to it.
Because I mean, when I was on the fire advisory board, we toured several facilities,
yep.
And there was a crew of about four or five of us that went to Orange County, Greene County, Sullivan, Dutchess. We did the old town of Ulster site and the old Woodstock site and Walker Valley.
One of the things you want to remember is that this this concrete building is different than a regular concrete building. This has high temperature tiles and the load bearing pillars are exterior. Yep. Those high temperature tiles really extend the life of the building itself.
There's nothing to suggest that it would last less than 25 years.
How old is the current facility?
90.
It's gone through several renovations.
The current building was built, 90? I want to say it was 97, 98 ish. The wooden training tower is the first thing that went up. That was like 94.
But that burn building doesn't have any protection in it whatsoever that we could find anyway.
No protection. They've done a lot of work over the years in upkeep on that, and it's extremely small.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're really looking to work with hose stretches and really giving, you know, multiple scenarios at one time, training multiple departments at one time. You know, one thing, in order to keep the firefighters, the volunteer fire service, they're coming on their own time. You know, and we don't want them standing around. We want to keep them busy for that 3 hours because we might not get them back next week or maybe that month. You know, they might not come back to the following month. So when we have them, we need to make sure that they're, you know, multiple people are stretching hose lines, multiple people are doing searches. We can't just have them standing around because they're like, well, why am I going to training if I'm standing there? Yeah. And we need to make sure that our firefighters are well trained.
For my question, just based off the conversations I've had with my local departments and, you know, I think the really important point that Everett made about the ever-evolving requirements for the training. I mean, I have friends and family. I mean, it's already extensive, but it's always constantly evolving just from my personal conversations with them and what Everett said. So I couldn't agree more with what Legislator Ronk said about investing right, you know, the right way and but also for the future in this kind of endeavor. My one question, though, is just in curiosity, going off of Heidi's question, once that lifespan's up, the, you know, 25 to 30 years, I mean, is it a complete rebuild, or can you kind of, like, once it reaches its lifespan, are we talking about an entire new rebuild of a facility, or is there
we're hoping with PM work, that we're able to keep it extensive. I mean, we're not going to go in there and build this building up just because it's built to withstand it. You know, there's limitations that NFPA allows us to burn. If we're doing state classes, there's limitation that New York State has us, you know, allows us to burn at. So the tiles itself, what's being told to us and from what the architecture is saying is that just keeping the upkeep, you know, you'll be able to do small work here and there to ensure that it lasts.
You typically establish a useful life and you start looking at the useful life of anything based on your maintenance costs. Mm-hmm. And if your maintenance costs begin to exceed your bonding costs, then you make the decision. You watch state make decisions in terms of replacing building or replacing bridges. If the repair of the bridge costs 65% of the cost of the new bridge, they make a decision to go to a new bridge. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have bridges that have useful life of 50 years that were built in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Right, that we're just getting around to replace. So when you start to think about, you know, the useful life of this facility, it has a, quote, useful life that the consultants will say, but proper maintenance and work on it will make it last longer.
There's an additional four firefighters in the room that can tell you the training that we're giving to our firefighters is really invaluable. You know, I mean, we're teaching them to go in and put fire out, do searches for people that could be trapped, right? And these people are doing it for free. You know, and they're going. So we need to make sure that they're going home to their families and their kids and so on. So, you know, that's really what we really need to think about there is, you know, how invaluable this training is, the type of training that this type of building, our facility that we want to build is going to give. It's invaluable for the volunteer fire service. I mean, Ulster County is one of the bigger counties in New York State. It's up there, like the top five, with how many fire departments it has in the county. I mean, 49 volunteer fire departments, and they're still operating. It is, you know, I sit there with coordinators in coordinator meetings, and they're like, "You have 49 volunteer fire departments in the county?" They're amazed, and then they're still operating. You know, so in order to keep that functioning, I believe everybody could agree. I mean, it's really, really important.
Now I understand we entered into an agreement with the town of Ulster. How many years is our agreement with the town of Ulster?
It's perpetual.
So that should extend to the life of
the MOA. The MOA is a little bit different, I think. I don't remember. I think it was 30 years or something. There is an expiration on it. The easement is perpetual, obviously. It's a property interest. The MOA is a bit different. I think that I don't remember, but I can get you that language if it's still in it. I remember we had a discussion. We didn't want to have an MOA that just went on, and there's some language in it that talks about ending. I have to say it's 30 years, but I don't want to be quoted on it until I look at it.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just the last thing, not to deviate from the town of Ulster site, but we're all in a public meeting, so I figured I'd get, I know I've heard some misinformation about this, so I want to get it on the record that there's been no move to end plans for the site at Ulster County Community College.
A couple of things. You begin to think of projects in the million-dollar ranges that they're not projects, they're programs. And you, one of the things that we did when we looked at this is that there's a significant advantages on a transportation area to think about and continue to explore the SUNY Ulster site. We've taken that through preliminary design. We do have wetland work that we've done out there. We've done some noise work out there. Quite frankly, there's not a traffic concern out there. We do have, I would say, very active neighbors that are opposed to that work. We do have, I think, a level of support at the elected official level at this particular point in time. So the thought in terms of why are we at the town of Ulster site versus the Ulster site was responding to the priority of the fire companies themselves. We also recognize, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that we do have significant budget concerns. And we've also begun that discussion relative to the college, our elected officials, in terms of whether there's funding, additional funding available relative to dealing with those budget issues that we may face. Does that answer your question?
It does. Budget issues aside, I mean, budget issues, that's where we're going to have to come in as a legislature and lobby our state elected officials for, for grant funds, and our federal elected officials for grant funds, and also, make room in our budget for these things, because, again, the cost of, I always go back to the cost of operating paid fire service across the county would be astronomical. So to spend a little bit of money at the county level to, and in the realm of a $330 million annual county budget, this is a little bit of money to spend on our volunteers to make sure that they're well trained and well prepared to keep us safe. So, I mean, that's, again, funding decisions are going to be made by the legislature. So, I would almost put the funding to the side and say, what do we need? And then we can decide how to get there and what we can afford.
From my knowledge, I know in Ulster County, it's all volunteer with the exception of the only paid fire services in the city of Kingston.
Correct.
What will be the relationship? Will there be a relationship?
We currently have a great working relationship with the city of Kingston. They provide assistance. They're part of our mutual aid plan, and they're going to be able to use the building. There's no reason why they wouldn't.
So I just have a question to, play devil's advocate. As a layperson, if you had to soundbite why it's so important to have three stories as opposed to two, and it sounds like what I gather from it is that you want to in the building with three floors, you can have more complex scenarios.
Correct. I mean, one is the third floor adds about two or three scenarios at one time at the site.
Okay.
On top of that, like I mentioned earlier, buildings are being built up, they're not being built out, okay? So being able to add the third floor now, and they're just going to get higher, okay. Keeping it, being understanding here, a third floor definitely helps. Being able to stretch hose lines up stairwells, okay, working in stairwells is tight quarters compared to working in a room, okay? Having a third floor fire to where they're going to hit a fire department connection, hit a standpipe on the second floor, and now advance that hose line up to the third floor. Right. I mean, a lot of that training needs to happen. That we have areas currently in Ulster County where they would have to do that, and those areas are just going to expand throughout our county because people are just building up now instead of out. That needs to be taken into consideration.
So, yeah, I was going to go around and ask. We've invited you here. It'd be great to hear from you.
So what's the realistic time frame to make this happen? So there's no funding in place whatsoever. There's a hope of a grant, and so there's
no
shovel-ready plan to do this?
We've got a capital plan of $4.5 million right now for the Town of Ulster site. If that about half of that's grant-funded.
That's
from the State Dormitory Authority,
yep.
Is that what I'm guessing.
And then with the county's plan, you're going to bond to make the rest of it reality?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the time frame on all this?
Well, we're currently at 60%. We anticipate...
in the design phase.
In the design phase. We anticipate design 90%. I think they actually came into the Dropbox on Friday. I haven't downloaded them yet. So we could get our reviews back. To make a long story short, with the cooperation of the legislature, we're in some really difficult time frames relative to bid documents coming back versus legislative resolution dates. We were shooting for May resolution on bid award and June start date for a contractor once we analyze it.
So bids would come in and be due and opened in May?
Right.
And to award in May?
I think we can, and with a start time.
And if the bids come back a little bit.
Don't forget, we have an award, then we have to go through contracts. Yeah. Right, so we have it coming back to the legislature for contracts in June. Right. So that's the current plan. There are all kinds of things that can hold that up.
Mm-hmm.
not the least of which is we have a safety officer that essentially has to go through, make sure we can meet all the building requirements. We also have submittal reviews that we have to do internally on that work, and then we have to make resolution deadlines. I know that there was a discussion about moving resolution deadlines yet, and I said, please not happen after June if we move resolution deadlines up. But be aware of the fact that, you know, one of the things that we want to make sure that we have the Ways and Means Committee on board, I think this is actually going to go through economic development as well in terms of law enforcement. So there's three committees that are involved. We want to make sure that all of those committees are updated and understand what's happening. We don't want to try to surprise anybody in terms of where we're going to be in this schedule, but it is tight. We are currently working on draft contracts that we would be able to essentially plug bid numbers in, but even doing that takes some time, as does the award itself.
And then you're looking at construction timetables and seasons and, yeah.
Well, construction timetables depend upon weather conditions.
Yeah.
This site will not be a pretty site to work if we get a lot of rain. It's just that simple. But assuming that we don't have adverse weather conditions, our consultants are telling us that we could make the work on the burn building. We don't want to be pouring concrete in the wintertime. It
yep.
creates all kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Into December, with substantial completion in that somewhere in December, January, and then a project closeout sometime in early spring. And then the administration building would be advanced along with that, but that's a contractor's decision in terms of means and methods and site disturbance. We're going to be asking quite a bit of the Town of Ulster Fire Service in terms of access to the site. As I said, we're going to haul a lot of fill into here. There's going to be a lot of truck traffic during that construction period. There will be that's manageable. Don't get me wrong, it's manageable. But that kind of traffic going in and out is going to have to be managed. And we've had our consultants, we have a construction manager on site. They've already started that discussion so that we have sort of a delicate dance in terms of making sure that the law enforcement facility can continue to be used and that we don't run into issues with respect to overlaps in terms of how we have to access the site. Does that answer that question in terms of timing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Supervisor Quigley, do you have any questions, any comments you want to make?
I just want to say thank you to Mr. Doyle. Based upon the presentation of March 12th to the Town of Ulster Planning Board, which set off the conversation of two-story versus three-story and where we were then and where we are now. There is a tremendous amount of progress that has been made that meets the requests of the volunteer fire services. And at this point, I understand fully that the outcome of this decision rests with the legislature's desire to bond the additional construction costs and amortize that over the appropriate periods going forward. So I fought for the fire companies and their desire to have a third story. I would advocate to the legislature that they follow through with the appropriate financial actions required to deliver a building that will be functional to the fire services for the next 30 years.
Would anyone else like to comment?
I'd like to just add to that because I'm an assistant chief in the Town of Ulster Department, but also the chairperson of the Fire Chiefs Association. At our most recent meeting about a week and a half ago, we had between 25 and 30 departments represented at the meeting that we held in Saugerties. And after the discussion, the presentation from Dennis and from the county, we kind of asked for consensus in the room to what direction would we like to see this go. And overwhelmingly, the consensus in the room was for a three-story burn building. We know it's a stretch. We know it's a financial stretch. But for all the reasons that were laid out here tonight, we could rehash all those reasons, but it is important to the fire service in the county.
Just to touch back on the complexity of the training that we talked about a couple minutes ago, Everett lays out, from the firefighter's perspective, the additional training benefits that come from a third story. But if you bring that out to the larger training ground, besides what the firefighters are getting out of it, you also look at, for instance, the pump operators that are working, so the firefighters that are running the engines. As we get higher in buildings, we have to start taking into account different hose lays and whatnot, and all that goes back to affect their decisions and how they have to react. So it enhances their training as well. And then also from the incident commander and the company officer's perspective, as you make the fire ground more complex, so working with more floors, bringing in more companies, adding more operations within a training scenario, you expand and enhance the training for the officers, particularly the incident commander, but also the company officers, in communicating between different levels of the operation, both on levels of floors as well as the different types of operations that are going on. So by going to that third story and going to a larger story and or larger building and the third story, you really do up the complexity, and you enhance not just the training of the individual firefighters with some of the additional skills that they have to do, but the skills of all of the people that are working on the fire ground.
So it sounds like it's pretty unanimous. All the feedback you're getting from firefighters is third floor. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, committee, for your time. And
thank you very much.
Just in case anybody would like to know, I'm pretty sure I get Everett to sign those pictures.
thank you very much for coming.
Can we get Tiny to make a really big blow-up of it?
Can you grab him?
Yeah, thank you.
Dennis. Thanks, Everett.
Okay. Thank you. So we're gonna go on and move ahead with the regular business we have here. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the...
So moved.
Second.
All
minutes.
In favor?
Aye.
All right, that was quick.
Madam Chair, I think that resolutions 133, 134, and 135 all encompass the same issue, which is tower rents.
Okay.
So, unless there's an objection, I'd like to move that we block those together.
Sounds good. So, 133, 134, and 135 with one notation here from the clerk that on 134, on the resolution itself, it should read amendment number 3, not number 5, and there's no action required by us.
Okay.
So all those in favor of resolution 133, 134, and 135, can I have a motion?
I make a motion that we consider those three.
Oh, that we
yeah, move, John, yeah. You want a second?
So we now all in favor of considering them together?
Aye.
Longer than okay, so we're going to consider all three. A motion to consider all three? I have to do it again, right? Yeah.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Any discussion? All
nope.
In favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. I'm going to pass all three of those around in just a second. I can do this more quickly. Resolution number 136.
I'll move it.
Second.
All those this is for Prime Care Medical. Yep. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. I will pass these around now, and I will take... I have some old business. Hang on. Let me just get myself organized here. I'm going to pass each of these around.
Night, Laura.
Oh, Laura.
Yeah. Should I stay?
No, I'll just walk out with you. I'll be right back. I just wanted to tell
you.
You're good.
We're good, right?
All right. Okay. And
thank you. We
can fit all yours. Just in terms of old business, I have here some updates on the budget in Albany that passed bail reform. Pre-trial detention reform, discovery process reform, and speedy trial reform. There should be two documents that were forwarded last week in OneDrive. One is a press release from the district attorneys, chief of police, and sheriffs, and the second is from the New York State Justice Task Force, a report on bail reform. And then one last item, and this is a little bit odd. We have financial reports for January and February. But they're 2 months behind, right? And they're going to continue to be 2 months behind because of our deadlines, our close, when the deadline is for the closeout procedure and when we meet. So you do have that data. You can take a look through it, but it will continue to be 2 months behind. The March report will be available at the May meeting. And that really, unless there are any other considerations, questions, discussion,
okay.
I'll take a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.